Oh, more love. Okay, yeah, that sounds good too.
Live from the Mundangerous Mushroom Circle in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 360 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about how to use Fae in your game. But first, the party gets pinned in the Kids of Morning campaign. And later, the Red Cap stomps around in the Character Creation Forge. We're back. It's been a minute.
Yeah, this episode is cursed.
Yeah, it's probably the seventh time that we tried to record.
Yeah, that sounds about
literally.
Right. I had some work stuff and then some unexpected travel, and I've been sick for 2 weeks. It's just been it's a real thing. And then we lost the show notes.
Yes, that as well. this is the longest hiatus between episodes ever in the, 40-year history of this podcast.
Does feel like 40 years.
Well, welcome to 2024. Wait, is it? I'm sure we've done other episodes this year.
Yeah. Did you finish Baldur's Gate yet?
Oh, hell no. I am firmly ensconced in Act 3, but like I've told you, I'm probably not going to do another run through this thing, you know, or like, I don't know, maybe years from now, but like, I'm just doing absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You having burned through it so quickly was very helpful because, you know, you got to give me heads up on things so that I could either avoid or run directly toward. So that's worked out really well.
Yeah, me burning through it so quickly was also very helpful to me because I have not played it since. It's great.
You can move on with your life. Yeah. No, it was great because you were like, hey, very minor spoilers. Don't talk to that petrified dude. Because he'll die. So I didn't. But then later, you can save him.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, after you kill the hag, he gets better. Do you know why?
Well, no, I have no... I mean, I can imagine.
Because she is, of course, the one who made him sick in the first place.
Yeah, interesting.
She's okay. The one who gave him the disease that he had to then go find a cure for. Yeah, well, which, like, look... That I think more of that will come up in today's episode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good... incidentally, since we're talking about Fae, yeah. I mean, I think the Fae
in... Classic hag.
Yeah, the Fae in Baldur's Gate are really well done. They're early. Like, they don't last too long, but, like, that whole kind of subplot is delightful.
Screw it. Let's jump right into it then, because we're talking about, like... I was going to bring this up as an example later, but, like, the hag quests and subplots in the game are, I think literally, now that I've seen like 95% of the game, I think literally my actually favorite parts of the game. Because like, look, there's this massive quest going on where you're like trying to save the entire Sword Coast, right? But the stakes of dealing with this hag are, they're not low stakes, they're personal stakes, right? Like... Mm. She's not trying to ruin the world. She's trying to ruin individual people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, it's interpersonal. It is like cozy evil. And that's the thing. Yes. That like really draws you in, right? Like you see, like you talk to her victims or you like read notes from people who've died or whatever. And you're just like, wow, that's cold. Why does she do that? Just cause she could.
It also features one of the only fights I had to genuinely save scum in order to get like an outcome that I was happy
that you wanted,
with. Like,
right.
Not to win, but like to, and it's not the boss fight though. The boss fight really pissed me off because I did not realize this. But did you know that if you kill a boss, it stops time? So like anything that was like, you know, you have X number of rounds in order to solve this problem. Like once you drop out of combat, like that just stops to count. So you can just go back to exploration mode and, you know, interact with whatever you need to at whatever pace you want. But like, I did not know this. So I burned a ton of resources fairly early in the game in order to like and save scum to solve this problem in order to rescue this person. Tried 3 or 4 different things that would not work, and it turned out that once the fight is done, all I have to do is pull a lever that I just didn't notice at any point earlier, which was annoying, but that's just a foible of the game. There's actually a fight that was genuinely hard as well that I was like, they are destroying me. I don't like I don't like having to spend all these resources to survive this fight. How do I do this cheaper?
I have definitely just, like Baldur's Gate in general, I have definitely reloaded a game, a fight I was winning because I was like, I didn't do this efficiently enough.
I can
like
win
it.
This more. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. not even like, oh, I used too many consumables. It's just like, I really wish I had cast these spells in this order. It would feel better if that happened.
And big misclick potential as well.
Speaking of this particular hag fight, the very first time I went through it, I had to reload because I, how do I put this? I killed the hostage because I misclicked a lightning bolt directly through her. I was like, wait, but that's elevated. It targeted
it's a line.
Her. Right.
It's a line infinity tall. Right.
Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, that it really just lets you do that, huh? Okay, reload.
Yeah. No, it's a this concludes Baldur's Gate 3 hour, but I really did enjoy that piece of it.
All right, look, we'll get into more hag stuff because like I think we're on record multiple times saying that hags are some of our favorite fae.
Yeah, we're both hags. But before we get to that, where are we in the Gates of Morning campaign?
So the Gates of Morning campaign is our 5th edition D&D game set in Eberron, a sequel of sorts to the original Morning Glory campaign. And deep in the Demon Wastes, the party is trying to stop the quarry from finding the Gatekeeper's seals and unleashing the chaos of Zoriat onto the material plane. On the other side of the lava-covered island, another pool bursts to reveal a smaller, putrid form, gripping a sickly-looking mace. Across the island, the Baelor and Pitfiend, sworn enemies, eye each other, and then move in tandem to attack the party.
The orb falls forgotten from Switch's hands, landing with a loud clink on the hot stone. With a bone-chilling screech, the Pit Fiend launches itself at her, battering her with claw, tail, and the flaming mace.
A follow-up bite from its sickly maw drips with potent poison, but Switch resists the effects. A wave of terror emanates from the Pit Fiend like a stench, but it breaks harmlessly against her aura of courage. Her return blow ignites with radiant fury.
At once, the rest of the party joins the battle. Vesicod fries the Baelor's mind, and it tries to shake away the static with a grimace. Lenore's arrow glances off the Pit Fiend's thick hide, and Warden conjures a storm cloud near the vaulted ceiling of the cavern, calling down a jagged bolt onto the Pit Fiend's head, before shifting into air elemental form.
Before Zan can close the distance, the Baelor spreads its wings and launches into the sky. While aloft, it lashes Switch with its flaming whip, dragging her 2 stories into the air before letting her plummet to the rocks. It follows her to the ground, diving behind its crackling sword to pin her. In their minds, the party can hear it taunting them.
I haven't come out to play in over 1,000 years. This will be fun.
Its smile fades for a moment as Bramble tries to paralyze it, but it shakes off the spell, just in time for Zan to sweep its legs out from under it with his glaive. The Baelor crashes to the floor beside Switch, and the Pit Fiend begins to laugh, a deep, noxious wheeze. The Fiend opens its mouth and croaks a single word in Infernal. Fireball.
And we'll find out what happens next time. So this time, using our lost notes, we are talking about using Fae, continuing our series on using iconic monsters both as a GM and as a player. We have said before, Fae are some of our favorite monsters, and I think maybe like, I don't know, 10 years ago, I guess, before really sort of like thinking in depth about this kind of stuff, I would not have said Fae because I had not thought hard enough about it.
I guess by way of background on this, it was at probably Gen Con 2016 at one of the Keith Baker panels. And he mentioned, I don't even remember what the context was in. It must have been an Eberron question, but he mentioned that like when he plays with Faye and when he writes Faye, he writes them as like though they are living their story, right? And the story of the Faye is what's so important to them, right? And therefore, like, in a way, they have to be iconic and they're bound by their nature because they exist in, you know, fairy tale form, right? The hag cannot change her nature because she has to be the embodiment and warning against the dangers of the unknown and the dangers of the untrustworthy, right? The fairy godmother cannot stop bippity boppity booping no matter how tired she is of it, because that is who and what she is, right? She is the, like, the embodiment of benevolence, right?
Yeah, and Fae are who they are, like you said, because of story. And those stories exist because of us, because of people, right? Whatever you're setting, the sapient creatures that tell stories to each other and about the world or the supernatural. They exist in the form that they are because we tell stories about them being that way, which is, I think, one of the reasons that you can get so close to them, right? The stories that you tell about Faye should be in some way personal and like deeply evocative and meaningful, because there's no interaction with a Faye that is going to be worth the Faye's time unless it is deeply meaningful to the person they're having an interaction with. Whether that is a fairy godmother saying, I'm here to make your wishes come true, right? Why am I doing that? Well, because you have a wish, you have a dream, and that matters to you, and so it matters to me. Or a hag who is arriving.
Because you have a wish and you have a dream, and right, that matters to me.
And I'm here to take it away, right? Like a hag, the unseelie, have no time for unhappy mortals. They are only interested in you if you are happy, because now they have something to ruin.
Right.
And because they make it personal, your players take it personally. And that's why there's such a deep mine to use Faye and to have your players and have your game care about them either, you know, positively or extremely negatively.
So let's talk a little bit about like defining Faye, because I think we've crossed streams of like a couple different sort of like mythos, like origins of Faye, right? They're all kind of similar, but they're also kind of different, right? So you have the kind of the fairy tale Faye, right? Like the original, say, historical mythological Faye, right? Which are, you know, the fairy godmothers and, you know, the evil witch in the woods and like those kinds of things, right? That exist as a warning or exist as an inspiration for mortals. You have your kind of, let's call it your traditional D&D Fae, in which, you know, there's a whole roster. They're all different, but they're all distinct types of Fae, right? So a red cap is different from a hag, is different from a pixie. And those aren't just species differences. Those are like they're like different raison d'etre, right? Like they exist for different purposes in the world of story. And then I think there's also like a sort of a modern fantasy kind of take on the Fae, which is your Seelie court and your Unseelie court and your ties to the seasons and your sort of like, you know, your playful and trickster and like all those sorts of like more humanized Fae, if you will, like the less strange and alien and the more sort of like just at the edges of your peripheral vision, if you could only spot them kind of feeling, yeah, right?
Your Oberon and your Titania, right? Like they act like mortals with infinite power.
Right.
And infinite time.
Right. And like that feeds into like your, you know, your like your true blood Fae, right? Where they're like, they have delicious blood. They can do magic. They're vampires, love eating Fae, right? And it's like, well, okay, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. I guess that makes sense. when we talked about angels a while back, you know, it was like, oh, there's 5,000 years of Judeo-Christian history to like, you know, and mythos to draw on when you're talking about like angels as they appear typically in like fantasy games. One thing I love about Fae is they are archetypal myth, right? And yes, there are stories that, you know, put them into categories, either D&D categories or like traditional mythological categories about what type of Fae or like, you know, nature spirits or woodland spirits you might come across. But also there's just this deep well of experience and feeling and communion that human beings have been doing for 200,000 years without necessarily defining it, that you can draw on and put in your game. And it is just as like valid as something that has a title in a monster manual somewhere,
right?
This is a bucket that includes the Loch Ness Monster, Wendigo, you know, Bigfoot, right? Mm-hmm. And that you have all these levers that you can move to go from silly to horror, and anything in between, or even at the same time, right? Like the red cap is silly until you see its teeth in its boots, and then it's horror.
Well, as somebody who once saw the Tooth Fairy film on a date.
Oh God!
I assure you, could be worse.
So, with all of these different traditions that you can draw on or create on your own, right? That you can drive inspiration from, when you're trying to figure out what role Fae play in your game, what place they have in your campaign, or you know how you as a player want to interact with them, you need to think about what is the motivation of the Fae that you're facing. And I think often in like tabletop games, we sort of divide them into two, right? Good Fae, bad Fae, right? Mm-hmm. Good witch or a bad witch, seely, unseely. I think that's probably too simplistic a divide, or maybe too positive, right? To say that, there's some good Fae who will help you and then some bad Fae who will hurt you. It's more like there are bad Fae who will hurt you. And then there are, you know, fickle Fae who might feel like helping you if they want, but also might not remember that you need to eat or breathe.
Yes.
While they're playing with you, you know?
Right. And I think part of that too, I think falls into where Fae are, like physically located in your mythology, in your mythos. Like, mm-hmm. are Fae wandering the mortal world, occasionally interacting and, you know, maybe, you know, hiding in the woods or walking amongst you and, you know, playing tricks or silently guiding you or quietly guiding you along? Or are they in, you know, the Fae Wilds or in the fairy realm in their respective courts? And are you traveling into their territory, which is itself alien and by definition, like inhuman, but kind of like extreme and overstated to a point that it's recognizable, but it's like, you know, it's like elevated, right? As it would be in a story.
Mm-hmm. So I think we can kind of break the roles that Fae might play in your game into three sort of general categories. And that would be friend, right? With like a question mark, or friendly, foil, and then just outright foe. Mm-hmm. And I would say friend or friendly, you know, includes like Jiminy Cricket, you know, like a guide or Puck, the narrator of the story, right? Mm-hmm. Who is not necessarily there to get in your way, might be there to actually help you, might be there for exposition, might be there just, you know, for fun because they don't have anything else to do and they live forever. And, you know, you look like you're doing something interesting, right? But they're probably not actively harming you, or at least not intentionally.
Right. I like when you break it out in that way, that, you know, kind of friend friendly and foe, is there's no room for neutrality. Again, because Fae exist as foils to mortals, right? there's no place in the Fae who did nothing. They aren't part of the story. Fae have to be part of the story, right? And so whatever they do, whether it's, you know, friendly or friend-ish, like they're doing it so that they're a part of it. And they're like, I think Fae are naturally participatory monsters.
Right, they want to be involved. For lack
of a better term. Right, exactly. So if you petition them, like, they won't just say no, right? Like, that doesn't really make sense. They might say yes with onerous caveats, but they can't just say no. Like, that's not in their nature to simply deny. And, like, they're, you know, like, you can't say no in an improv scene, you know, like you have to accept the premise and like expand upon the story. Right.
Right. They are both story and way. Storyteller.
Exactly.
Right. So they're going to yes. And you, they'll probably hand you a prop.
Right.
cursed prop. You know,
in some ways, like, you know, it depends on your setting, whether Fae are aware of this, right? Like, whether that is, like, not just their nature and their origin, but also, like, is literally, like, how they speak. But they might, right? They might just say, like, well, you know, when a protagonist comes to you know, beseech me, how could I let the drama die? You know? But, of course, there must be trials and tribulations before you can reach your goal.
Right. And sometimes there's drama in the suffering.
Well,
sometimes that's what makes for a better story.
Exactly.
Right. Right. but yeah, let's do sort of the next step down was like foil is kind of more of a wild card. Right. And it, the same Fae or the same group of Fae may alternate back and forth again, not neutral, not, we have no stake in this and we have no say, but this time we will help you. We'll see about next time. This time mm-hmm. we are opposed to you. We'll see about next time, you know, and that might be because of fickleness. That might be because of they can see the future that, you know, that might be because they just like to watch you dance.
Which season is ascendant in court?
Yeah, right, right. Uh-huh. Who's in power right now? Where are you? What continent are you on right now?
Right.
The seasons change if you walk fast enough and far enough. And then, of course, you move down to foe. And I think if you look at foe and friend, when you're talking about Fae, they're two sides of the same coin in that typically they have an understanding of mortals. They know what mortals like. They know what mortals need. And the friendly ones use that to help you. I know that you are looking for true love. And I'm not going to give you the object of your infatuation because I know that's not what you need, right? You're going on an interesting quest to actually find someone who you are compatible with versus the foe who is, I know what mortals need and I know what you want. And that's how I know how to keep it away from you or how to wait until you have it so I can take it.
Right. Or that's how I get my hooks in you so that, you know, I can have something else. Right. And I think the example you used of the hag causing the illness that required the bargain that led to the, you know, an adventurer becoming petrified permanently. Like, I think that is that's like the level of arch that you can get to when you talk about foe. Whereas, you know, like a red cap, like we'll talk about later, or, you know, like darklings or something like that, for example, like they're there to fight you. Like that's their thing, right? Is they fight. They're just like, they're not going to be more than that, but you still have to have Fae who embody those elements too.
They can also exist in the foil arena, right? Like something like brownies who, you know, fight you. Sprites, they fight you, right? They have stats for a reason and like they're tougher fights than you think they might be, except for when, you know, they liked how you fought and now you're buddies.
Right.
Why? You know, cuz. And I like, again, if you think about the hag and the petrified adventurer, right? Like when we talk about like motivations, again, like to get into the mindset of like the fae, I think the good fae is easier, right? Like you're sort of good for goodness sake. It's almost like knight in shining armor, right? That's a good story. But the evil fae, I guess, quote unquote evil fae, the ones who are out to harm you, to hurt you, some like the reason for that sometimes is just because you don't like it. You know, like what does the hag get from tricking an adventurer into like petrifying themselves? Absolutely nothing except the suffering of that adventurer. And no matter what, she wins. Either he is petrified as a statue in her garden, or he becomes unpetrified somehow after she's defeated, or he defeats her or whatever. And now his entire family's died of old age. Like the suffering is the point. The cruelty is the point. That's all she needs. You know, she doesn't need gold.
Right.
What she needs is a good story. And the suffering of your character is a good story. Now, I will say, when it comes to a game, when you're running a game, or, you know, when your GM introduces them in your game, it is usually better. And, you know, this is how it worked in Baldur's Gate. It's usually better if these kinds of things happen to other people in the world, right? NPCs. And the players confront that in a way that lets them experience it third hand without necessarily experiencing it for themselves, at least to start with, right? And now you know, like, okay, well, if you don't want this to happen to you, you should probably leave the hag alone.
Right.
And if you decide, oh, we're going to go defeat the hag, well, all bets are off, right? Like, and
exactly.
Do you have a family written down in your sheet? Right. And that's the thing, right? They play the long game. What does the hag want? Oh, I want you to find true love. Why? So I can take it from you. No. Not so I can take it from you. So you can have a baby.
So you can give it away.
So you can willingly, distraught, hand me that baby.
Right. Exactly.
That's why we're doing all of this. And then you can watch me eat it. And like, just what, like, okay, if we're fighting someone who wants to like cover the world in darkness, yes, on principle, I and the party will fight them. But the BBEG who ate my baby? Like, what? Like, this is personal.
Right.
There's no scenario in which like she now convinces me to join her, except actually there probably is a scenario in which she convinces me to join her because that's what she does, because she just offers you a bargain that you cannot refuse.
So the other thing I want to touch on with that, or with like the foe archetypes, are that it doesn't always have to be personal to you, as you mentioned, right? Like it might not be personal yet, but like I think of our actual play with the Meanlock encounter. Do you remember that? Where we're investigating, and it was a very annoying encounter, right? It was like annoyingly written. But like Meanlocks are fae who like drink in despair, right? And they like emanate fear, and like that's what attracts them. That's what like causes them to spawn, and that's what they thrive upon. And so, like, where are they? Well, they're not. They have no like interest in the PCs, right? But they do have an interest in the place where the PCs have to go. And that explains why they're there, right? Like something has already happened there. And their existence is, one, an indicator that you're in the right place, but also now like they are serving the function of a regular monster without having to be more complicated, right? They can still be your bag of hit points that you just have to fight your way through. But by existing, they've served their story purpose, right? They've advanced the plot forward by telling you something terrible happened here. That's why they would be here.
Use these reasons, right? They may begin as opaque to the party, as inspiration for how you describe these encounters with fae. Like they are by nature magical in a way, but not necessarily unapproachable, right? It's familiar magic, fae, in general. So when you have a party encounter fae NPCs, we often talk about like, oh, when you meet the lich, like what is the rotting smell, right? Like what are the different senses? And a fae should smell not like an object or a food. They should smell like a memory, something from your childhood. They should look like someone you know, or they should look like not.
Well, they should remind you of something. Yeah.
Right. Right. It should like, even if it's like a hengioke, right? It looks like an animal objectively, but you, when describing it to someone years from now, wouldn't say, "Oh, it looks like a fox," right? You would say it looked cunning. Think about the adjectives that you use. Like use adjectives rather than nouns to describe fae. They are feelings, they are emotions more than they are objects. And they move, right? They're not pinned down. So in one moment they can feel like one memory, they can smell like one emotion, and in the next, like when they shift, when they change their mind, when you make them angry, they're suddenly very different.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about playing fae as NPCs.
So when they come in to contact with the party or with other NPCs, with mortals, what is their goal, right? What is it that they want to get out of this interaction? And that could be as simple as like curiosity, right? You know, like I'm a sprite and what do? I fight and play forever. So here you are, let's fight and play. But try to take that up one step, even for something like, you know, red caps and brownies, right? These low level, like one step above like animal motivation fae, you know, what is the overarching thing that they want to do in general, but what is the thing they want to do today, right now, here in this place with these people they've just run into? Not just, the question is not just how are mortals useful to this particular fae, but how are these mortals right now, today, useful to this particular fae?
I think typically you also want to be playing your fae as at least somewhat aloof, right? You know, as you mentioned, right? Like they understand mortals, but they don't understand what it is to be mortal, right? So they might not understand the necessity of, as you mentioned before, breathing, right? They might not understand like the urgency of a life that ends in 70 years, right? Those concepts might be foreign to them, and therefore like they may seem alien or uncaring or, you know, aloof, but it's really just that like they can't relate to it. And they don't relate to the individual. They relate to the arc of the story of the individual.
Right. Like even children understand the existential horror of Rip Van Winkle losing, what is it, 20 years of his life by falling asleep under a tree. Fae, for the most part, don't.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. You took a nice nap. That sounds like a great nap.
Well, it's a nap in the Feywild, so, you know, could right. be 15 yeah. minutes, could be 15 years. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, who cares? No, you don't understand. My whole life has passed me by. Well,
right.
You did it. And I think when it comes down to combat, right, to actually fighting these, to having Fae be antagonists, that is probably the space where you can make the butting of heads really meaningful, right? That slight misunderstanding, whether that is because the Fae have actually literally evil intentions and want to do harm, or are just sort of accidentally or unintentionally harming you.
Right. I mean, I think like when you have evil Fae, I think the most interesting ones, of course, to fight are the ones that are like tricky, right? Ones that introduce the abilities that are often feeling unfair, right? So they have fear auras, they have invisibility, they have, you know, mirror images or illusions or otherwise, like, you know, they have lairs that are heavily, you know, like trapped to their favor, right? Like when you fight a fae in their home, you should feel wrong-footed and disadvantaged. But otherwise, like, you know, if you have, you know, kind of more of that foil or even friend fae that you end up fighting, like, it might just be a good fight, right? And you know, their capricious nature might take over midway through and we're not fighting anymore. There's no need, right? We've accomplished what we intended to. We don't have to fight to the death. I don't need you to die. I just needed you to do that.
Right. The goals are different. It's not necessarily victory. Even with evil fae, right? It's not necessarily what we would consider victory.
Well, I mean, this is an episode with red caps as the coda, so sometimes it is murdering you and dipping their hat in your blood. Like, that is a thing.
And you know what? That's their story. It's good. It's yeah. good. It's a straightforward story. Yes, the combat with a fae should keep you on your toes. Even the straightforward ones, right? They like a red cap has unassuming strength. Like, it is stronger than it appears, right? Things are never what they seem to be at face value.
Right.
And that it means that when you're facing them, you know that things are not as they seem, right? And that is a useful bit of intel when you're going up to fight against them. You need things that can dispel magic. You need things that can help you see things the way they truly are. You right. need things that reveal the truth. And you need to understand what rules these fae are abiding by, because I think part of the confusion that comes between mortals and fae isn't necessarily that, like, we tend to describe fae, even the good ones, as like chaotic and like unruly and, you know, not bound by rules. But the thing is, they're bound by different rules. You know, like you mm-hmm. said, they're bound by the rules of the season. They're bound by the rules of nature. They're bound by the rules of the court that they, that they're a member of. And you don't necessarily know, unless you do your research, what those rules are, or like what the, you know, Queen of Ice and Darkness has decreed that they need to abide by. You know, like the whole don't eat their food thing, don't tell them your name, right? These are strange rules that wouldn't apply in, like, you know, a mortal court. But they're very important rules and are maybe even the keys to winning an encounter, or at least walking away not dead, or, you know, pacted to an archfey. Think about someone like Rumpelstiltskin, right? He didn't play fair, right? His game that he set forth was, you have to guess my name. There's no like fair way to win that. And the way that it was won was what we would call cheating, right? Which is overhearing him singing his own name, like spying on him when he quote unquote should have had privacy.
Little bit of hubris, really, is kind of the lesson that I took away from it, but sure.
Yeah, well, also true. But, you know, figuring out what are the weaknesses there, and then doing the thing that doesn't necessarily feel or seem honorable or noble or by the rules or whatever, that's fine. The only rule was figure out his name. However you want to do that, figure out his name. And once you do that, like, was there magical power in the name? I don't know. Like, in the story, chains don't fly out of your mouth when you, like, speak his name or whatever, right? He just gets so angry that you won that he kills himself.
Right.
But, like, them's the rules. Like, you guessed my name. I gotta give the baby back. There's, like, no way I can just keep the baby and walk away, you know? So combat with a fae, often, like, you can have your regular fights, your regular combat, you can swing your swords, you can sling your spells, you can do whatever you want. Ultimately, though, I think it's more interesting if there is some sort of non-combat objective that is the clincher, that, like, actually leads to the final victory.
Yeah. I also think, unlike a lot of the the monster types that we talk about in this series, fae are one of the ones most prone to leaving you unconscious, right? And not killing you, but can, like, letting you wake up and recover. And now that they have the upper hand, right? Like you said, you may be less than fully willingly impacted to an archfey, but that's okay because the adventure continues, right? It's just changed in some way.
Right. Now I have you where I want you, where I wanted you in the first place. The whole point was
right.
to drive you to your knees.
Exactly. You could have just eaten the food. I wouldn't have had to do this.
It's delicious food.
Right.
That's the problem. It's so delicious. It drives you mad because you can never have it again.
We should mention there are lots of interactions between Fey and PCs. So if you want to play a centaur, a satyr, a fairy, there's races for that. There's also like, you know, your archfey warlocks, your College of Glamour bards, like plenty of different classes that have either Fey inspired or like direct links to the Feywild. So, you know, that isn't the only way to play those connections. Like I wasn't I guess I was. I was going to say, I wasn't a Fey Druid, but I very much was a Fey Druid in Morning Glory 2, wasn't I? So
you were half Fey, using reskinned Asimar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And but also like I was Moon Druid. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And you were specifically you and Bramble were green singers tied to Thelanis, which yep. in Eberron is the plane of story and myth, which is very right. much a one version of the Feywild.
And I was indebted in service of, unwillingly pacted to, the Prince of Inconvenient Truths. No, the Prince of Unfortunate Truths.
Unfortunate Truths, yeah. He was a foil. He was foil.
So I think we've talked about this on the show before. And I don't know. It's going to fit here because this is the PC section and it was my PC. But the single like best depiction of a Fey story that I've run across that like was the inspiration for that character was in the Kingkiller Chronicles by Patrick Rothfuss. Like there's a tree like in the fairy realm that like no one like the whole deal is that like it's guarded by centaurs and nobody is allowed to come within, you know, range of it or whatever, and they like viciously protect this thing, and it come to find out spoilers for, you know, a several year old book, like the reason is because this tree, this fey, is so evil. It only speaks truth, but it does it in the most, like, the way that is designed to cause the most suffering. Like, so it is omniscient, and it only speaks in the way that creates more grief in the world. So by nature, anybody who comes in contact with it must be killed immediately, because if they were to leave and use any of their knowledge in any meaningful way, it would make the world worse, right? And it's this very charming and nice and friendly and informative tree, right? He sneaks up to it, the main character, Quoth, and like kind of befriends it and learns a lot of valuable information, but it's all the worst things for him to know, because you just know it's going to make things worse and you don't know for whom. And it's just like, it's such a delicious, like, Fey trick, you know? It's like you get what you want, but you get the worst version of it. And I just like, I love it so much. So I would, you know, I would encourage like for an interesting kind of modern take on Fey and how they can kind of interact with player characters. Like I think Quoth's background and like involvement with the Fey in Kingkiller is really great. So I'll just call that out. So we watered that down a little bit. For the Prince of Unfortunate Truths. It was kind of more localized pain that he would share, less, you know, make the world burn.
It's more, here's something that will be unpleasant for you to hear. It's true, but right. unpleasant for you to hear.
Right.
Before we move on, I that does make me think, right? A more modern take does make me think about sort of more modern versions of Fae or Fae in more modern worlds. And I think there's a tendency to feel like, because Fae are often tied to like nature as well, right? They sort of have like, they're in that Venn diagram of story and myth with nature, that in the modern world, in like, you know, the concrete jungle and like, you know, in Shadowrun, here in cyberspace, like the Fae have less of an influence, you know, because they're so tied to like nature and trees and dryads and, you know, springs and whatever. And I think that realistically, it should actually go in the other direction, because with the internet, with global communication, with satellites, there are more stories being told than ever before, and they're spreading so much faster than old myths would have by word of mouth, which means that the Fae, either born out of those stories or drawing power from those stories, are going to spread or proliferate that much more quickly or be that much more powerful. And I like the idea of exploring like a cyber Fae, if that makes sense, right? Like one that doesn't spring out of the natural world because this is where troubadours pass by, but one that springs out of, you know, is a ghost within a matrix that now has sprung into existence because because someone spread information, a truthful information that should not be shared on the War Thunder forums.
I like that, though I kind of feel like the idea that technology has made the world smaller is what squeezes out the Fae, right? Because the Fae live in the unknown, and they live in the doubt, and they live in the like the deep dark where you don't go, right? But the internet, well, I guess on one hand, the internet is all deep dark that you shouldn't go. But on the other hand, like the internet has like, you know, democratized information and like made things accessible and like brought light to places that were dark. And so, you know, there's no place for the Fae in a world without that kind of doubt. I suppose it depends how cynical you are. Well, it depends how cynical you are. Yeah, exactly. Like, I would say the internet of 2001 is probably less Fae than the internet of 2024.
Right. But yes, I see the Fae of the gaps philosophy.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Let's talk a bit about magic and magic items specifically, because you're going to encounter that in most of your games. We've already talked a little bit about how, you know, because their magic is story, it is fine, and it is, in fact, expected that a lot of their abilities will be based on the needs of the plot. So, like, if you need a Fae to do something for the story, then it probably can do that, you know, or at least facilitate it.
Right.
And as players, you know, you'll need to look out for that. That is both positive and negative, right? If you come up with an idea, well, if you know a Fae, or a middlingly powerful Fae, they can probably help you figure out how to get that thing done or have that piece of magic or whatever.
If you really want it.
Yeah.
You
can
go to the court.
But also, you are now standing on a rug, and that rug will be pulled out from under you.
Right. They are inherently magic creatures, right? So just about any item you want could be a Fae item, right? There's no reason that Fae would not have any magic item that you're looking for, right? Could be in their possession for one reason or another. So, you know, they're a good source to go for GMs who need to be able to pull out legendary items or artifacts or strange and very narrow cast, you know, trinkets from antiquity, right? Like, you could always find them with the Fae. That's a reasonable place to look for them. They could be lost, or they could be prized possessions. Who knows?
Right. Like, if an item is truly lost, then the only way to find it is legend lore, is about the myth and story about where it's located. And of course, it will be the Fae who will know where to get it. In addition, next to devils, Fae make the most bargains. And if you want a thing, there's an excellent chance that someone somewhere along the line had that thing and gave it up and traded it to a fae for something. And that is another plot point, another plot hook, or even just a very interesting bit of lore about every item that you receive from fae or buy from fae or whatever.
Yeah, I do like that idea of like, oh, it's just a normal plus two dagger. It is a normal plus two dagger, but that one was used for fratricide. Oof. Bad aura on that one.
You won't believe what they gave to get it.
I think fae are also typically associated with cold iron, particularly a weakness to cold iron, which, I mean, I don't know what the origin of that is. Is it that cold iron is itself like an oxymoron?
Is it right that it can't exist, that it is a thing that only exists in a story, right? Iron forged without heat.
Right. I think that has to be the kind of like the meaning from it. I don't know.
We could look it up, but we won't. Mm.
We will not do that.
We'll let it exist in the liminal space the unknown. Of doubt.
Right.
Like my master wants. They're also associated with, again, bargains, right? Things that you want. But what do normal people want? What do simple people want? Folk medicine, charms, protection, safety, blessings, family. Mm-hmm. You know, the simple but necessary things for life in a little village, you know, for people who want to live a quiet life, but now you've involved the fae. Mm-hmm. You've involved the fairy folk and you are not going to have a simple life anymore. No one in the village is. So now there's a run on salt.
Well, I like the idea too, that like the form of their magic often comes in those kinds of like folk medicine, folk charms, kind of like, you know, folk history forms, right? Like I hate to use this one again, but like your bibbidi bobbidi boop, right? Like there's a song that goes along with like creating the magic, and there's like a dance and pieces that you need in order to do it, and like you have to enchant mice in order to do the work because you couldn't simply do it yourself the way a wizard would simply prestidigitate a dress, right? Like the fairy can't do that. There has to be like kind of that hominess to it, right? I like the idea that like their magic isn't just snapping their fingers or uttering an incantation. It is more like performative.
Yeah, which means you can also tie it to their skill, you know? Like fae can learn to be better at doing magic, right? Mm-hmm. Like devil's just like, oh, I leveled up by depositing more souls into the devil bank. And now yeah. I snap my fingers and you get a better thing. Right.
And I'm now a lemur.
Right. And fae are like, I've really been practicing.
Right.
You know, the last couple adventurers got turned inside out. That one's a sheep. This one's still asleep, but you're going to be fine.
Only like one of them deserved it.
Yeah. I'm doing great. I got great odds. And then I guess you just mentioned, right? Like cozy again, like warmth, like, The last thing that I want to mention is sort of unique among monsters that often portray as antagonists in games, right? Like there are lots of creatures who are usually your friends. Oh, the angel is a guide and blah, 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 you know, and you can have good interactions with them all the time. Fine. But it's so rare that you get creatures who could kill you, might kill you. Might ruin your life, right? Like that, you don't really know when you approach them. You don't really know when you like side with them or get into a bargain with them, but who also at the same time have this real potential for just these like cozy stories, if that is what you want to tell, or if that's what you want to tell like for a little while right now, right? And and it's because their interests are so personal and because they want to know your stories. They want to know what it is that you want. They want to know who you are. They want to know you personally. They want to know your family. They want to know your home. They're fascinated by like things that you own and things that are meaningful to you. And if you want a little break in like the drama, there is an opportunity after, and I would say after like, you know, highly charged interactions to like come right. to a detente or to come to an understanding where they're like, oh, I get you now. Okay. Well, like, I don't know. Do you want to fiddle? Cause like really what I like to do is fiddle, you know?
Well, it's also like, it's interesting because fey magic might be the only magic that you experience without knowing it until after the fact, right? Like it's very reasonable, like you said, like after a charged moment, right? You've just escaped whatever, you know, you've been waylaid by bandits or assassins or whatever, you know, gnolls came and attacked your caravan. You fled into the woods. You're terrified. You're lost. You don't know what to do. You don't have any of your stuff. And what do you stumble upon? But just like a nice little cottage, right? And a friendly face who asks you lots of questions about yourself and gives you a place to sleep for the night and packs you lunch for the next day and sends you on your way, right? And it's like, they just provided the respite. Didn't ask for anything. But when you find out later that like, oh, well, you know, that's the, you know, the heart of the wood or whatever. And like, she only manifests when, you know, people are lost and at their most desperate. So if you ran into her, you must have been in a pretty bad way. And like, that's just fey magic, baby.
Yeah. I also love that could also be Baba Yaga. Like,
right. Exactly.
You, on your way. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You leave and you're like, was this house always on chicken feet? But right, like, she doesn't exactly have to kill you.
Right. The doubt might be enough, right? Or, right, you know, she might call in a debt that you didn't realize that you had entered far down the line.
Right. Right. Also, she can also just be tired, right? Like, right, she can just be like, I am also actually an old lady. Like,
right. Yeah.
I was eating soup. I had a lot of soup. You ate some soup and it was fine, whatever, you know, like tomorrow I'm going right to summon demons and like terrorize the Cossacks. But like, you know, it's just another day.
I mean, the soup tasted great. You don't want to know what was in it. But other than that,
yeah, don't ask
there was questions. Literally all I did was, you know, so it was human bone soup. But right, other than that, like no harm, no foul.
And
you're
now,
fine.
Now you're telling people about the nice lady in the woods.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's it, you know, like, so I love that kind of like layering in the magic and the story and the deceit, or not even necessarily the deceit, but the question, right? Like when it comes to the fey, even the friendly ones, you can never quite be sure. And I feel like that's the essence of fey magic is like, it's powerful. It does what it says on the tin, but is that all it does? You're never quite sure. And that doubt is critical to like working with them.
Yeah. I love that you can flip back and forth so easily with fey. They can be your enemy one moment and then flip and they're not. There's like, I'll very quickly paraphrase. There's this, again, cozy little story about fey interaction. I'm wondering if I can like, it's like a green text basically. I'm sure most of you probably already read it. If I can find a link to it, I'll drop it in the show notes. But you know, it's this woman who wants to have a baby, right? It's a village and she wants to have a baby. So she like goes to the fey in the woods and makes a deal and says, the fey says, great, you're going to have a baby. You know, but come back in a year and like, you'll have to pay the price. And she's like, okay, fine. So, you know, she goes back, does what the fey says. She has a baby. Lo and behold, it's wonderful. Everything's great. A year later, she like has to go back because that's what you got to do. And like the fey is like, I have switched your baby with a changeling. Wah-ha-ha-ha. And now you must choose which one is your child and which one is the changeling. And the woman's just like, I take them both. Like, I see two babies in front of me. I don't need to tell the difference. Give me both of them. And like the fey is just so like, okay. Yeah, okay. And now she just has twins. She just has twins that she loves.
And like, one of them won't eat them in utero.
And then like, you know, she tells other people and like, you know, 50 years later, this village has lots of twins, you know? And like the Fae in the woods is just like, every time someone's like, hey, I'd like a baby, they're like, well, you know the deal. And they're like, yep, I'll get twins. Give me the changeling baby. I'll love it. Okay. And like, that's it. that's the whole story. It's just, I wanted a nice thing to happen. I will ruin you. Oh no, it's okay. That sounds good too. More love, more love. Yep. Oh, more love. Okay. Yeah. That sounds good too. like you can stick that in any game.
Yep.
And then go back to your horror. It's fine. It's the one place you can take a safe long rest in Curse of Strahd. That village.
All right. Do you hear that, Ishan?
It's time we get twins.
All right. Well, let's move on to the character creation forge and figure out what we're getting two of. But before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at EvilSansCarne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at TotalPartyThrill.
And join the conversation on Discord. There's a link in the show notes.
All right, so this week in the Forge, we're building the Red Cap. Shane, what is a Red Cap?
The Red Cap is fairies wear boots. They are the murderous embodiment of violence. They wear big iron boots on their little fey feet. They have eponymous red caps that they dip in the blood of their victims in order to sustain themselves. And they wield nasty, sharp, little, wicked-looking sickles that they swing around a lot and generally cause all types of mayhem and grossness.
Yeah, there's some of the simpler fae, but they usually work for more powerful fae who are going to be tricksier.
Right, yeah, they kind of get sent. They're sort of the, Luca Brasi sends his regards. Like, they're the regards. Yeah,
right, they're the horse's head in your bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the build?
So we'll start with Mountain Dwarf for +2 con and +2 strength. You pointed out that dwarves are not small sized and red caps are, but get over it.
Fair enough.
Then we will take 5 levels of Open Hand Monk and 3 levels of Beast Barbarian.
And that's all you need.
Well,
they are CR3.
I mean, yeah, they're CR3. And like, what do they do? They don't sneak very well, so they don't have dex. They've got big boots that they use to kick you and knock you prone, and they swing that sickle a lot of times. So how do we do that? Open Hand Monk gives us Flurry of Blows, and at level 5 you get extra attack. You can use those to knock prone. You can use your Flurry of Blows, like use one of those attacks to knock prone. You get a sickle or a comma as a monk weapon, and then of course at level 5 you also get Stunning Strike. So, you know, if you already happen to be on the ground, well, that's a curb stomp. If you're not on the ground, that's a heavy iron boot to the chest. And now you're stunned.
Hey, look, they're not moving.
The breath. Exactly. The breath knocked right out of you.
One nice thing here about Open Hand Monk is it's one of the few abilities in the game that let you knock prone an enemy of any size. So like you got this tiny little red cap and I don't know, a titan. It doesn't matter, right? Like a giant, the Tarrasque.
And like big magic boots.
Right. Yeah.
Then from Beast Barbarian, 3 levels, we'll get, of course, Rage, which is what we're here for. We'll also get Reckless Attack if you've got to be a little more, a little more splattery with your sickle. We want Rage. First of all, we're going to use Strength, so it'll give us a bonus to damage. But more importantly, it will give us advantage on grappling and strength checks so that once we knock somebody prone, we can plant our big heavy iron boot firmly on their chest and keep them pinned down.
Which means their speed is 0, which means they cannot stand up.
Yeah, exactly. And now you are just sickling left and right, just sickles all day, which you will use in some cases your claws, which we will kind of reflavor as sickle, in the form of the beast. So that's, you get to choose like one of your manifestations. One of them is claws, and it will let you make an extra free attack when you take the attack action. That will, of course, just be more sickle swings. They happen to have the same damage, so that's very convenient. And then what that means is that level 8, you can, in one round, you can knock a target prone, grapple them so they can't get back up, make two claw attacks and a sickle attack, all for D6 damage, just at will, whenever you spend key to flurry. You can also add a stunning strike in there if you need to, or you can just make 5 attacks, all of them little sickle swings that add just little packets of damage. And you can also always throw your boot in for a stunning strike.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to take a nap right after this, it could be 5 stunning strikes.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very angry fairy wearing boots.
All right, and that's all you need, because anything you take after that is just gravy on top of the red cap biscuit.
I mean, I think the right answer is monk, but my heart says barbarian here. Just angrier,
angrier. Yeah.
A little angrier.
More rages, bigger rages.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, monk is probably the right thing, but I'm sympathetic to both. All right. So before we wrap up, we want to take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters.
Your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show. And now supporters at any level get access to our episodes ad-free. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out all of our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
You can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It is a great way to support the show and help other people find us. If you do, we'll read it on the air. So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We are talking about playing and running games in the Avatar: The Last Airbender campaign setting.
Are you about to make me watch that movie or TV show?
I'll make you watch the animated one. I won't make you watch the Netflix one.
No, that's like 7,000 hours.
It's only 3 seasons and of like, 18
of 26
minute
episodes.
What else are you doing?
Yeah, what else am I doing? Not recording the show, apparently.
Yeah.
All right. And in the Character Creation Forge?
We're building the Bloodbender.
Well, that's it for episode 360 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name. But either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.